Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Today, we visit a small town in the middle part of Georgia that has made great efforts in its own community development and is now seeing the fruits of its labor. And we talk with a city commissioner, we'll explain that, with an entrepreneurial spirit and a dedication to driving his community to progress while keeping the character of his small town the way it has always been. We're going to go talk with City Commissioner Shelley Berryhill in the small town of Hawkinsville, Georgia. Come go with me.
Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia.
Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Our nation is going through an incredible transition right now. There's a mass migration to small towns and rural communities. People are seeking out vibrant communities with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, low cost of living, and strong local economies. If that sounds like something you would like to find, then I invite you to discover the City of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home.
All right. I'm looking very forward to this, and you all should be too. This is going to be an entertaining interview and podcast episode of Small Town Podcast. But I'm at the Chamber of Commerce office in the city of Hawkinsville, Georgia. I'm sitting with a commissioner. We're going to get into why he's a commissioner, not a council member, and has been the chairman, not the mayor, a couple of times. City Commissioner Shelley Berryhill of Hawkinsville's city commission, not council. And looking forward to having this conversation with him today about so many things, including his best-selling books. So, Commissioner Shelley Berryhill, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to Hawkinsville, Georgia.
Yes, sir. Let's go over that first, because I usually just go straight into talking about you. I've got my standard first question, but I've explained so many times to people, because I used to have to ask people, do you have at-large members? Do you have districts? Do you have whatever? And I would say, man, I bet people think this guy's an idiot. He's a mayor of a small town. He has no idea how cities work. And it's because every single city can be completely different in the state of Georgia. And a lot of states are like that, too. But explain your setup, because it is unique. You're not the only one that does it like this in Georgia. But
our situation is pretty unique. We have a five-person commission. We're called city commissioners. There's five of us. We are all at-large, every one of us. And we don't have a mayor, but we do have a chairman of the Hawkinsville City Commission. What we do, we're not bound to this, but what we do is we just simply rotate the chairmanship among all of us each year. So 1 year it's post one, 1 year it's post two, 1 year it's post three, and so forth. And so I've been on the commission now over 20 years, and so I think I've been chairman four times maybe. But
they call you chairman, not mayor.
Right, chairman.
You sign on the line that says mayor sometimes in
the
documents,
state
you said.
Typically calls me mayor if I go somewhere and
right.
I'm chairman, but and that's fine. They act as mayor for that year.
Right.
But we don't officially have a mayor.
Now, do you now? Because now, my city council in Osceola, the first meeting of the year, it says mm-hmm. in our charter, the council members decide from amongst themselves who will be the mayor pro tem. And I know mayor pro tem's different in every city too.
We do that with chairman.
Right. So you guys just rotate around. But is there anything that says the same person can't be it over and over again?
No. In fact, kind of an interesting story. When I got onto the commission, it was time for a particular person to rotate into chairmanship.
Yeah.
And the commission did not vote him into chairman that year.
Okay.
So he got up and walked out.
So it's kind of a tradition to rotate it, but not
it's
an obligation.
Not an obligation. And so I actually ran for his unexpired term.
Oh, okay.
And so I served 2 years and then ran. And
so that's how you got into it.
That's how I got
into
it.
And we're jumping way ahead in the story. We're all out of order, Shelley.
Oh, that's fine.
Well, that's interesting. So
but that's
yeah.
how I got into it. I used to, and I hope I'm not insulting any of our former commissioners when I say this, but I used to go to city council meetings, city commissioner meetings,
right?
Because they were more entertaining than going home and watching Andy Griffith. And I used to say, man, somebody decent needs to run. And I finally decided, you know, I'm not much, but I am decent. So I decided to run.
And that's how you got into
and
it.
And that's how I got into
in
it.
In a special election, because it was an unexpired
right.
term.
That's correct.
Well, that is very interesting. I can't wait to get more into the how that got going and what's happened since then. But let's go back to the beginning of your story, Shelley Berryhill. Can't wait to talk about your books. Can't wait to talk about all the different entrepreneurial things you do.
All right.
But let's start with the very beginning. I'll start with the same first question I ask all my guests. Were you born in Hawkinsville, Georgia?
I was born in Hawkinsville, Georgia, September 9th, 1964. Been here all my life. Other than 2 years up at Georgia Tech, I've lived here my entire life. And I plan on being buried here in the city cemetery, Orange Hill, at some point, hopefully in the very distant future.
Right, yeah. You had a near miss. We'll probably talk
I
about last
I did have
last
a near
year.
Miss
yeah.
in 2020. Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
So talk, since you were born and raised here, talk about, I guess, what life was like growing up. You said 1964 you were born, so late 60s and in the 70s was your childhood.
Sure.
So what was that like in small town Hawkinsville?
Oh, it was great. Just like every small town. You know, everybody knew everybody. Nobody ever locked a door. Just if you could walk outside at daybreak and play all day in the woods or in the town. My father ran the grill here right next to us where we are now. I'd go to work with him sometimes and I'd just play around the city all day long. It's amazing what all we got into and didn't get caught. And this chamber office is right next door to our historic opera house. And in the 70s, it was a dilapidated building about to fall down. And I used to break into that thing and be all through the basement. It's a wonder it didn't fall on me. And around the late 1990s, we totally renovated that. And it's beautiful now. But back then, it was just dilapidated.
Right. Now, there are some people, when I ask this question, you know, talk about people who were born and raised in the place where they now serve. Things have changed a lot. Things have grown. Things are different now. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's looked upon as not so good. But how has the field changed, I guess?
My goal on the city commission has always been that we want progress, but we want it slow and we want it controlled.
Right.
We don't want to lose our character, our nature, who we are. But at the same time, we want to provide jobs. We want to provide a good, comfortable living for our citizens. That requires growth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a balancing act. We want to grow, but we do not want to be Warner Robins. I love Warner Robins.
Yeah, you still want to hold that small town
we
feel.
We want small town. So that's always been a challenge, but that's part of the fun too.
Well, that's always and there's people who have come from far away and end up being the mayor on the city council or city commission where they are, and then there's folks a lot of us that born and raised where we are and kind of want to keep things the way they were, at least the feel of it.
I'm sitting here thinking about our city commissioners right now, and as far as I know, every one of us was born here. And I could be wrong on one or two of those, but I think we were all born here.
Yeah. Well, now you said you were here, went to high school here, but then you went off to, what was the name of that school you said?
North Avenue Trade School.
North Avenue Trade School. Yes, I've heard
Georgia
of this.
Georgia Tech. So I was working at a local bank here, and the bank president had offered if I would go to school at night at Mercer, he would pay my way.
Wow.
So I thought, absolutely. So I was going to Mercer at night, and a former friend, he was a teacher, but I never had him in school, but he was a good friend, thought I had more potential and I should go to Georgia Tech. And he went to the counselor's office and forged my name on an application, personally paid the $10 fee at the time,
yeah.
got my transcript illegally from the counselor's office, sent everything into Georgia Tech unbeknownst to me. Yeah. And I go to the post office one day and there's a letter from Georgia Tech and I'm wondering, what is this? And I open it up and it was an acceptance letter.
Wow.
And hopefully the statute of limitations is over and
I think you're good.
My diploma is good, but I never officially legally applied. And, but when I saw that acceptance letter, I said, I got to do this. And I went back to the bank president and told him, and he totally understood. And he said, you got a job waiting on you when you graduate.
So what were you, so you're working at a bank here in mm-hmm. Hawkinsville, you're going to Mercer. What were you trying to get a degree in at Mercer at the time?
At the time, computer. Okay. I was kind of the local computer guy at the bank.
Okay, okay.
And
well, that makes sense with what I know about you.
We were going to go in-house with our own processing.
Uh-huh.
So the bank president, Mr. Samway, couldn't have been nicer to me. He actually put off us going in-house for 2 years so I could go get my degree at Tech.
And what'd you get that degree in?
And I got my degree in business management, industrial management actually is right. the official degree. But it was basically business. And the reason I did that instead of computer science, I hated calculus. And a computer science major, I had to have like six calculuses.
Right, right.
I knew I was coming back to the bank. So I went into business. We had much more electives, many more electives. And I ended up graduating with more computer classes than a computer science major.
So you still took the computer science
courses. So I guess you could say I minored in computer.
Sure.
But I ended up with more computer than a computer science major.
And came.
I knew that's what I was going
to
do.
And came back to work at the bank?
Came back here.
Had that job waiting on you.
Yep.
Nice to be in a small town where people know you and say, hey, whenever you're ready, come on back.
The bank's always been real good to me.
Good, good. That's the first I've heard of you working in a bank because I know you've got some other things going on.
I worked about 7 years at the bank. During that time, I was one of my jobs, I was a computer guy, but I was also operations officer. And one of the jobs I had was we were doing in-house appraisals on houses that we were loaning money on. And this was in the late 80s, and it was before appraisers were licensed in the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. Anybody could basically call themselves an appraiser. And I was doing it for the bank. I've always had a little entrepreneurial spirit to me. And so I wanted to do appraisals for other banks. Well, no other banks wanted to hire me when I worked for their competitor.
Sure, sure.
And I had been there 7 years, and I like change. Change does not scare me. I'm one that likes change. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to hang my own shingle and do real estate appraisals. And I did that. Lord's blessed me through that. Well, I've been doing appraisals for 30-something years now, and it's put a lot of food on my table. So I've enjoyed it.
So then all the banks would do business with you, including the bank you left?
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Yes. And now the laws have changed some since then. The banks don't really hire us now. They have to go through a third party. And anyway, but
you've adapted with that and still.
Yeah, I've adapted to that. And that's been fine. And so I've been doing appraisals for most of my life. And then while I was doing appraisals, since I did have a computer background, the local school here started calling me as they started buying computers. Hey, come help us install this. Hey, come help us figure out this problem. And I got to the point where I was spending a lot of time with the school system.
Yeah.
And finally, the assistant superintendent, John Bembry, called me in and said, look, just come to work for us. They were very flexible on their time with me, so I could still do appraisals. And he explained the insurance and the retirement, which as a young person, I didn't know how important those were.
Sure.
Now that I'm about to retire, I understand that.
You're glad you did it.
I'm glad I did it. So I've been with the school system for 27 years and have thoroughly enjoyed it. So I do appraisals and the school system.
Your title was technology officer? Or
technology director.
Technology director with the school system mm-hmm. for, you said, 27 years
27
total.
27 years I've done that.
And then doing the appraisals for 30 plus years.
30 years.
Going to still keep doing that even after you retire.
Yes.
And then I did mention this when I introduced you. You're a best-selling author.
Well, that's an artistic liberty you're taking there.
Talk about your book.
So about 14 years ago, my daughter was 14 at the time. And my son, 6 years younger than her. And I was on Facebook. And one day, for some reason, I posted something I thought was funny. I don't even remember what it was, but I thought it was funny. And I posted it. Well, both of my kids came to me and they're like, Daddy, no, you are embarrassing us. you can't post stuff like that on Facebook. And I said, oh, really? So I started posting one thing every day,
all the time,
just to bug my kids. That's all it was for. And I started doing it every day. Well, I did it so long that if I didn't post one day, people would start calling me saying, hey, where's my funny today? So I kind of got in the habit of doing that every day. And I did that for several years. And then I had people telling me, oh, these are so funny. You ought to write a book. You ought to post these in a book. So I finally did that. And I now have three books on Amazon of all these funny things that I post. And they're...
And tell them the name of the book.
Facebook Funnies is one of them. And then the other two are Shelleyisms, Volume 1, and Shelleyisms, Volume 2.
I own that's Shelleyisms, Volume 1.
That's what people started calling them.
I need the rest of the collection.
And I've got to be, you know, full disclosure here. I don't make up all this stuff. It's just things that I've heard. I've made up a few of them. But most of them are things I've heard, or I've been doing this so long, people send me stuff now. They'll email me, hey, you ought to post this, and I'll do it. There's some hilarious ones in there.
I just pulled up, and I follow you on Twitter.
Okay.
So everyone who wants to follow and see the dailies, it's at Shelley B. That's S-H-E-L-L-Y, the letter B. The one that comes right at the top, I think you've got this one pinned at the top, it says, I once dumped a cross-eyed girl. I thought she was seeing someone else.
Yeah, some of them may be a little inappropriate. Oh.
Well, here, I'll read this next one. My car has heated seats and even a heated steering wheel, but only in the summer.
I'll never forget one day I posted, I will never, ever again take a sleeping pill and a laxative at the same time. I posted that the next day at the school system. I had three teachers come up to me, put their arm around me. Oh, are you okay? Do you feel good? And I have to say, these are jokes, people.
I'm just kidding.
So, yeah, I have to be careful. People are very literal in this world.
Yep. But Shelleyisms, Volume 1, Shelleyisms, Volume 2.
Volume 1, Volume 2.
So it's not fair to call you best-selling?
I don't know. My goal on those books, I always hope to sell enough to cover the cost of the ones I give away.
There you go.
Because I just try to give away a lot of these books. They're just fun.
And you're close to even then?
I think so. I think I'm about close to even.
Well, let's talk about, we kind of already got to it, but obviously at some point along these multiple careers, you got into local government. You said you were going to the city commission meetings purely for entertainment purposes. Was there something, why did you go to the very first one? Just out of curiosity? Because I started going to them to kind of see what was going on.
At the time, they were having them at 5 p.m. on Thursday afternoons.
Yeah.
And at the bank, I got off early on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, well, instead of going home, I'll just go see what's up. You know? And it was...
Just kind of a curiosity.
It was
thing.
Just, again, I was not overly impressed at the time. And some of it was... You know, laugh. You could either laugh or cry.
Yeah.
I chose to laugh.
But do you remember some of those early issues and discussions? Because, and this is not just Hawkinsville, there are the things we end up discussing are the details
really
that are
wasn't
really
the
important.
Issues that amused me. It was the personalities.
Just
of the
how they went about discussing
we
the
had
issues.
Some personalities. And again, I'm not knocking their decisions. It was just the personalities involved. And I just thought, you know, some of it, in my opinion, was not very professional. And I thought, man. Again, somebody good just needs to run. And so I finally decided my family has always had businesses here. My dad ran the grill for many years. My mom ran the Radio Shack here. Mm-hmm. And so downtown development, downtown progress was always important to me. I worked at a local bank, again, local business doing appraisals. So it was just always important to me. And so I decided to run and try to make a little difference. And hopefully over 20 years, I've done more good than bad, but that's for others to decide, not me.
And you said you ran a special election. If I got the story right, you just told us earlier, the decision to who was going to be the chairman of the commission, it was in a normal rotation. Mm-hmm. That was the tradition. And they broke tradition and kept...
They broke tradition and didn't elect this
whoever
guy.
Whoever was next in line.
And he was pretty upset about it and stood up and walked out.
And he resigned. And that was it.
That was it.
And so that triggered a special
election.
I ran
for his special election.
You said, hey, why not? Was there? I mean, you kind of described what was important to you, downtown development and business development. But was there like a specific issue or something? You're like, you know what? If I'm on the commission, I can help make this particular thing happen.
Just all the above. Again, a slow growth, progress, jobs. If I've had one, I've only been opposed one time in all my years, but the one time, I guess my campaign motto, if you will, was jobs. You need jobs in a small town, and so many of them go away. They go to Atlanta, they go to Warner Robins, and so we need jobs in these small towns, and so that's what I've worked on. And we've been pretty successful. We've got Hollinsworth and Bose here as our largest private industry, and not too many years ago, they were looking to build a new $100 million plant, and they're located all over the United States. Mm-hmm. We fought hard to get that expansion. It finally came down between us and Seattle, Washington. We fought very hard, and finally, three of us flew up to Boston, which is the headquarters of the company, and sat down with them. And a week later, they announced Hawkinsville, Georgia.
Wow.
And so,
Seattle.
Yeah.
A much bigger city.
Yeah. Yeah. We did. And that's we were great. Proud of that. And so we've, again, they're our largest private industry. I've spent a lot of time focusing on healthcare here. We have a small regional rural hospital, and it is so important to our town. And so we spend a lot of time on that. Like every small town, we have a dying downtown, like every community does. So we have struggled, and we have put a lot of resources and energy in developing our downtown, and that's gone very well. We have done facade grants. We've given out almost $100,000 over the past many, many years, and about 40 buildings have had total facelifts. And we've got a long way to go. We just have to do it in bits and pieces for the money.
Well, I see there were several murals downtown when I drove around before I came here, and some of them look like
five different murals and
newly restored.
More coming.
Yeah.
Sure do. They just enhance the look and feel of downtown, and it's a great return on that investment. One thing we're very proud of in this town is we are an archway community.
Okay. Yeah.
Archway is a product of the, and this is hard for a tech guy to say.
No, I'm going to have the same problem. The Public Service and Outreach Division of the University of Georgia has a lot of great things to offer. I said it.
they absolutely
they
do.
They just do.
Jennifer Fromm is the Vice President of Public Service Outreach, and she's doing a great job. And one of their units is Archway. And what Archway is, it's kind of like, you know how UGA has county extension agents in every county to help the farmers. Well, in eight counties in Georgia, they also have, basically, it's an economic development professional who comes in and helps the community with economic development, with community issues, with overall development and growth.
Well, and you get to choose, because I've gotten to know Michelle Elliott, who's the head of that, and I've met several of the Archway professionals that are throughout the state. You get to kind of custom fit your program when you set it up for 3 years.
We started out with listening sessions where we had 200 citizens plus come and show up.
Yeah.
And we whiteboarded what issues they think are important.
What do we need to focus on?
And then we came up with about six of those. We grouped them together into about six categories. And we've been an Archway community for about 10 years now.
Oh, wow. So
and
you renewed
it's
several
incredible.
Times.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Well, you don't really graduate per se.
Well, it's a 3-year commitment.
It's
minimum.
A 3-year
you can
at
just
a time.
Keep going. Yeah.
But if you're still doing stuff, they'll stick with you. And we've stuck with them. And it's just been a great program here. And through Archway, we've done our local branding. We have our Come Home to Hawkinsville.
Yeah. Well, now that was through Carl Vinson.
That was through Carl Vinson.
I got that book from Dr. Laura Meadows because she was talking about it. And so I asked her about it. And then in the mail, about 2 weeks later, she shipped me a copy of that. So I still have your Hawkinsville. And I forget what they call the book, but it's pretty much a branding.
It's a branding.
Yeah, proposal.
Yeah, they did a great job on that.
And I saw your signs when I came in. And I recognized it from the book.
Absolutely.
That's really good.
And then we've gone from that into we applied for, and this is also through UGA, but we had Archway help us on this. And we applied for the RSVP program.
Yep.
That's the Renaissance Strategic Vision Program. It's GMA, Georgia Municipal Association, UGA, and there's one more group that kind of sponsor that.
Is it Department of Community Affairs?
Yes. Thank you. DCA.
Yeah.
Sponsors that. And we applied, and we won that right going into 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of got put on hold with COVID. So we're just now coming out of that and getting back on it. But our community wrapped their arms around that, gave some money toward that, some seed money toward that project. And now we are meeting every quarter, and we go through this book. We have a nice book, which is our plans. Same type thing. Community, what do you want to see? And what the community wanted to see is, let's keep focusing on downtown. Let's get rid of these vacant buildings. Let's get rid of these dilapidated buildings. Let's bring our downtown to life. Let's focus on the river. Hawkinsville is very unique in that we have a river basically running through our downtown. Such an asset that, to be frank, is underutilized. And so we're focusing on the river, trying to, you know, get some outfitters and brew pubs there overlooking the river. And we're fishing to put, I'm jumping ahead here, we're fishing to put a, we just got a $500,000 grant from the Department of Natural Resources. And right there on the river, we're going to develop a multi-generational city park. We're going to have skateboarding. We're going to have pickleball courts. We're going to have splash pads. We're going to have walking trails. We're going to have dog parks, all right there at our river.
Let me ask this, because I didn't come in to the interview thinking this, but I know from talking to you over the years at GMA events that this was already going on. And like I said, I got this book. I knew what Hawkinsville mm-hmm. was doing and utilizing some of those resources and assets that the state has and provides.
Yes.
So let me ask you to speak to, I guess, the importance of planning, because in Ocilla, with our Downtown Development Authority, we've gotten a few things started: Historic Preservation Commission, a Land Bank Authority, we're a GIT community, so we're going through the Georgia Initiative for Community Housing. And people are constantly asking the question, sometimes critically, sometimes just like out of genuine curiosity. Hey, we haven't really seen anything yet, the results. And so I'm constantly saying, I'm constantly pointing to other communities. And after what you're just saying, Hawkinsville is going to be one of them. Sometimes these things take a long time. And so speak to the importance of planning. And I guess I'm asking you this because you're now so far down the line that you're starting to see the fruit.
We are.
Of the things you planted, you know, 10 years ago.
Matt, 15. One of my big frustrations of getting, you know, again, I'm an entrepreneur. I have my own business. And if I make a decision at 8 a.m., I'm upset if it's not implemented by 6 p.m. I'm really upset.
And as an entrepreneur, you have the power to make it happen that
yes,
fast.
But in government, when you make a decision, I've learned now, and it's frustrating, but I have learned I get upset if it's not implemented that year. And that's usually a lofty goal.
Yeah.
The wheels of government turn so slow. To give you an example, we're building a new city hall, and Sarah, our city manager, is going to speak to that a little later in this interview. But we're building a new city hall, and one of the walls of the property that we're tearing down to build our new city hall was built with some Indian slave labor. We had to get letters from four different Indian tribes okaying us to tear down that dilapidated wall. I mean, that took 3 months just to get those letters. Now, they all were gracious, no problems, and gave us the letter. But just little stuff like that, that who'd have thunk it, you know? But
the requirements to
all the requirements and the environmental and the, it's just everything moves so slow. And then the other frustrating thing, you know, you apply for this or that, a grant, a loan, whatever, and they tell you, okay, you got to have this. Well, we spend 60 days and we get that. And then, oh, well, now you've got to have
this.
Here's
the next thing on the list.
And I'm like, why didn't you just give us this all up front? But they do not do it.
Well, and even beyond, because there's the bureaucracy.
There's the bureaucracy. But going back to your question, things take so long. But we, too, have been through GIC. We, too, have been Georgia Initiative for Community Housing. We have really focused on grants and programs that DCA and the state, UGA and Archway and all offer. And you're right, Matt, we are seeing the results. The wheels do move very slow, but we've been at this a long time. We looked at downtown and thought of it like a mall. And malls have anchor tenants.
Yeah.
So we looked on one side of our town and we had an old cotton mill that was dilapidated. It was environmental hazard. We worked with a private developer in Winston-Salem and helped them to get tax credits and both low-income housing and historical tax credits. And it was probably a six-year process. But we now have that's been renovated into beautiful apartments, and people are living there at the edge of our downtown. You know, people live, aka shop, eat,
right,
where they live.
Yeah.
So we're very proud of that. Then we went to the other side of the town. And we worked with TBG Residential out of Atlanta, and we took an old 30-year abandoned hospital and help them. And we've developed that into about 64 apartments again. So the other side of town now has an anchor tenant, and
like filling in the middle.
And now we're working through the Renaissance program that I've already spoke to. We are working on our downtown. We're working with DOT. We're fixing to repave and restripe our main Commerce Street. In fact, that's what it's called, Commerce Street. Yeah. And
it's good to have a Commerce Street.
Right now it's four lanes, and as people come across our bridge, they travel sometimes a little too fast. And so we are restriping that and changing it from four lanes to three, which is two lanes with a turning lane.
Yeah.
So it's going to slow down traffic, make our downtown more parking friendly and more pedestrian friendly. So that'll be happening this year. But it does take time. We did so much through GIC. When we were in GIC, Georgia Initiative Community Housing, we identified 106 houses in our community that were dilapidated, beyond repair, uninhabitable. And we set forth trying to tear those down and beautify our city. And so far, about 45 of those have come down, many of them just through the homeowners initiative.
Yeah.
We wrote letters and said, hey, you own this property. Nobody's living there. It's not safe. And most of them, they've taken down on their own. The ones that wouldn't have been through the court system, and the court ordered them to take them down. A couple of them we've had to do at the city, but then we take them down and then we put a lien on the property for the cost of tearing them down. So we're still working on that. That's been a 10-year process. Everything is very slow.
You just said 10 years. That was a perfect, because the bureaucracy is part of it.
Yes.
But then part of it is things just take time to do, especially in a smaller community, resource strapped. It's not like there's just a pot of money over there to make everything.
Well, either new fires pop up to put out,
exactly.
Or we happen to get a grant to do something else.
Yeah.
And then that grant has time limits. So we have to shift our focus over to something else.
Because every grant, just about every grant, has a matching requirement.
Yes,
so you got to come up with that too.
We put in our SPLOST for the last couple of SPLOST, Special Purpose Local Option Sales Tax, a matching portion for grants.
Okay.
And that's helped us to do that.
That's the first I've heard of that. I'm sure other communities have done it, but that's a really good idea. You want to make that as broad as possible so you have leeway for those six-year terms. But absolutely.
But we've got so much going on. Again, we've had our Taylor Old Hospital renovated into Taylor Village. We've had our Cotton Mill Lofts renovated. We've got the downtown facade grants that's being renovated. I just mentioned Commerce Street, which is going to be redesigned. I've already mentioned the new park by the river. We're getting a brand new city hall. Our city manager, Sarah, is going to talk about that in a little bit. Hawkinsville's got a lot going for it.
Yeah.
It's a great place.
Well, Shelley, I want to talk more about it with you and talk about some of the assets. You actually mentioned the Opera House, and I want to talk about the harness racing facility. Not every community has that, especially small towns.
We are the harness horse training capital of Georgia.
But before I do that, I got a segment called the Get to Know You questions that I enjoyed doing, and I was actually very looking forward to your answers on these. So I've got four questions to help us get to know you better. I bet people that think they know you are going to learn something new in this. First question. Do you now have, or have you ever had, a nickname?
No, never.
Nothing?
I've got such a unique name,
guy,
Shelley, which is a unique name for a guy.
Right. You don't need to come up with a nickname.
I was actually named after a football coach in Cochran, Georgia, Shelley Hayes.
Okay.
And so my parents didn't consider it a feminine name.
Right.
But because of having a unique name, I think that's probably why I've never got a nickname.
No nicknames. As funny as you are, as much as you throw stuff out there, no one ever came up with a nickname for you.
None that they've ever told me to my face.
That's fair. So you may have multiple nicknames.
I may have multiple.
Just none that you're aware of.
Don't ask Sarah what she calls me behind my back.
I can't wait to talk to Sarah now. All right. Second question. What would be your go-to karaoke song?
I do not sing.
That's okay. People say that all the time when I ask this question. And quality of singing is
probably
not the point.
Probably an Air Supply song.
This is awesome. Which Air Supply song are we going to sing? Come on.
My mind's going blank. Name me some songs and I'll tell you which one.
I gotta have to look them up.
Air Supply. Come on. Sarah's our music person. I was just singing one yesterday with the radio is the reason that came to mind. I'm all out of love.
Air Supply. So lost without you.
Yep.
I feel it
that
too,
That would
Shelley.
Probably be my song.
All right. So this one's easier. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Well, it's a good time of year to be asking me that. I love dressing.
Yeah.
So turkey and dressing.
You're ready for the holidays.
Absolutely. One of my favorite, and I'm ready and can't wait.
All right. You do dressing at
and
Thanksgiving.
Reese's Cups.
Did you put Reese's Cups in the dressing?
I go on the Reese's Cup diet several times a year.
Okay. And Reese's Cups and the dressing? Do you ever combine these things?
No, I usually separate.
You should think about this.
But I do the Reese's Cup first.
Okay. Dessert before, just to make sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Final question. If you could attend any concert of any singer, duo, band, any kind of performer of any kind, whether they are now dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
Dead or alive would be Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash.
All, you know, and I think that comes back from my name. I used to love the song A Boy Named Sue.
A Boy Named Shelley.
And so I've always had an affection for Johnny Cash. I'm actually just bought tickets. My wife doesn't know this yet, but she probably won't listen to this anyway, to Air Supply in Atlanta in January. So I'm looking forward to that.
All but, right.
Yeah.
Well, if we need to hold this out for a while, we can.
Nah, it's all right. Vonnie, bless her heart, does not even read my Facebook posts.
Well, is she embarrassed by him like your kids are?
She just rolls her eyes and moves on about her day.
That's right. That's why she don't know about all the money stockpiled from the best-selling books.
That's right. From the
books.
Millions of books.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, Shelley Berryhill, thanks for letting us get to know you.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt.
I've said many times on this podcast that while the leadership of the mayor and council, and in some cases city commission, is imperative to move things forward, nothing moves forward without good staff support that does the actual work and really makes things happen. Shelley Berryhill has already mentioned her name more than once so far, so I arranged to meet with the city manager of Hawkinsville, the one overseeing all these community development projects that we've been discussing so far.
Hi, my name is Sarah Myers, the city manager for the city of Hawkinsville.
All right, and Shelley Berryhill mentioned her name several times, so now we get to talk to Sarah, the famous Sarah, who's running everything and making it all happen. So Sarah Myers, city manager of Hawkinsville, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be here.
So Commissioner Berryhill, Shelley, mentioned you several times. He's talked about some of the things that has been happening over, maybe even predates his 20 years in local government, but he keeps talking about some of the things that are going on right now. So tell us some of the projects going on. Are there some going on at City Hall? He's already referenced something down on the river. So tell us more about some of the exciting things that are now in action in Hawkinsville.
We've got a lot going on for the city of Hawkinsville. We're getting ready to build a new City Hall complex. It'll be a 9,000 square foot City Hall. We will be going from a 2,600 square foot City Hall, so a little bit more space.
So wait, 2,600 to, you said 9,000?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
We're going to be able
more
to
than
stretch
triple.
Our arms.
When you do that, obviously you got more space. Have you already created the need for more space? So there's some new positions or new staff members will be there, or another function of the new City Hall?
Well, we're definitely looking forward to future times. So there will be additional office space that can be filled.
Okay.
Not necessarily right now, but.
But essentially
but
preparing
the future,
for the future. Okay.
Correct. There's space to grow.
Good. That's actually very forward-looking.
Yeah. As our community grows, positions may need to be added, so there will be a space available.
And is one of those offices already set aside for Shelley?
He'll have
access.
Well, he'll have access to the building.
He's sitting right here.
His has a restroom symbol on the outside of the door.
There you go. Perfect. So new City Hall, what's the timeline on that? Is that's already in the works?
In our current times that we're having today with the supply chain, we're facing a lot of challenges right now.
Yeah.
The contractor has told me a year, so I can expect 2 years maybe.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay.
Already just to get steel right now, we're looking at May.
I've driven around a little bit, but how close to the current City Hall location is it? Are you putting in the same spot?
No, we're building at a new lot.
Okay.
Close to the river.
Mm-hmm.
Less than a quarter mile down the road, a block down the road from where we currently are.
So talk about, because I know from my position and then just talking to other officials, where you put City Hall, what you build it out of, whether it's, and in City Hall, a fire station, you know, any kind of government facility, even the Chamber of Commerce, where it is and what it looks like adds so much and means so much. And some people want to say, oh, let's just build a cheap building because we don't want to, you know, waste taxpayer money. How did that factor in as far as all the planning that went into this? I would imagine that was discussed at least some bit. And you're putting it down by the river, and that's an asset that you kind of want to exploit a little more.
Right. Well, and one thing Shelley's always said, if your community sees your government investing in your community, then they're going to want to invest in your community. So we felt that City Hall needed to be in our downtown area. It will be a metal building with a brick facade.
Mm-hmm.
and we'll have roof pitch and columns that will mimic some of the historical properties in our downtown area. So it won't look like a modern structure stuck in the middle of 1800s properties.
Right. It'll blend in with what's our character of the town as it is.
Right.
Okay. And what's, because now this other facility I was going to ask you about is kind of, I guess I'll call it a recreation place for a splash pad and other things going on down by the river. I assume is the new city hall close to where that's going to go? And tell us about that.
Yes, it'll be right across the street from the new city hall.
All right.
It will consist of a walking trail, a splash pad. We'll have some pickleball courts, skate park, dog park, and it will all fit in this defined space. And our existing Veterans Memorial Park will remain intact. We received a $500,000 grant from the Georgia Department of Natural Resources. It's a Land and Water Conservation Fund grant. And the city will match half of that. So we have to put in $500,000.
Right.
So it'll be $1 million project by the time it's finished.
Wow. And what, I guess, like I said, same kind of thing on the planning. You're doing so much investment specifically on the river, and these things sound like, it sounds like you didn't just think about this last month and now you're putting it in place. This is a long-term strategy. So what is it you're trying to do, and how are these projects going to kind of move you in that direction?
Our main focus is our downtown area.
Yeah.
And this park, if it can bring people to our downtown area. And I don't know if Shelley mentioned it, but we recently passed a new ordinance that will allow for residential spaces in our downtown area. So if these people are living downtown, they'll be able to walk to facilities such as our park, and hopefully it'll just be a chain reaction of new development in our historic district.
Yeah. I usually ask this at the beginning. Were you from here? You grew up in Hawkinsville? Or you from somewhere else?
No, I grew up in Hawkinsville.
Okay. So what does this mean to you to be in this? How long have you been the city manager?
City manager for 3 years. I've been with the city for 5.
What were your other roles before that?
Before that was finance director.
Okay.
And I've been in government for 10 years. Yeah. Prior to that, I was the county clerk for the county.
Okay. So I hope there's a good city-county relationship. You came over from the county.
Yeah, I crossed sides 5 years ago, but it was a good transition.
So not speaking as the city manager, speaking as a person who grew up here and who I assume loves this community very much. Otherwise, you could have gone somewhere else. What do these projects mean for you? I don't know, it must be fulfilling to be a part of and to be kind of at the helm doing these things and making them happen. What's your personal vision or hopes for it? I mean, talk about the downtown development. Obviously, we want that chain reaction, but speak from a personal interest about what it's going to mean for Hawkinsville.
If we travel to places like Warner Robins or Macon, which is 30 minutes or an hour away, some people, that big town is for them. But for me specifically, I love being from a small town. Everybody cares about you. If you've got struggles going on, people have your back here, whether they're family or just friends or even strangers. And growing up here, you know, as a teenager, I always thought, I'm getting out of here the first minute I can. And so I'm glad to be able to work here and live here and give back to my community and be a part of my community and all the exciting things we've got going on. I just hope that future generations will see what we've done and know that it was for them, not just for us as a government. It's for, at the end of the day, it's for our community and visitors. So just really proud to be a part of that.
We've talked about two really big projects that sound like they're going to have a really huge impact, and they just sound incredible from my vantage point. What's maybe it's too early to ask this since you got to finish those, but what's next?
Well, we're currently working on, the Downtown Development Authority is currently working on a remodel of an old dry cleaners that's right behind right next to our historic opera house.
Yeah.
It will more or less be a business incubator. It won't be a specific purpose building, so whoever leases it and or buys it can come in there and do what they want, whether that be a retail space or preferably an Italian restaurant, if I could have my say about what goes in there.
Hey, you're a person of influence in this town. I think you can make that happen.
That would be my ideal business, but any business will be great addition to our downtown.
Having space, and I've learned this, and you know, there's a lot of people that think, oh, well, government shouldn't be involved in business, shouldn't be a property manager, shouldn't be whatever. But especially in a small town, when you have a struggle or a challenge to get that outside investment,
the city just has to step in, has to be that catalyst. And so that's what I see, something like that with the business incubator, having a spec building or, you know, a downtown building that the city or downtown development authority has some kind of control over. So now, and I'm pulling for your Italian restaurant. Let me know when that's there. I'll come back.
Absolutely. Yeah, we, you know, with small towns, you do have to have that catalyst, and you just hope that at some point that beginning process will let others see, hey, look what you can do if you just put your mind to it and your dollars to it.
Well, sure.
So that maybe one day our town can self-sustain itself.
Yeah.
With building developments downtown. And now's a great time to have a business in our downtown area. Our historic downtown has a rural zone designation, which offers tax credits, and also opportunity zone for the next 10 years, which offers tax credits. So it's the ideal time to buy and work in Hawkinsville.
All right, going to get some phone calls now.
That'll be fun.
Tax credit opportunities, things going on. It's like you said earlier, you're doing some things, some of these bigger projects is to start and hopefully create a domino effect. And so the city, in the absence of someone else coming to do it, the city leads.
Right.
And then others will follow. And so it sounds like you have some really exciting things going on in Hawkinsville. And I appreciate you, on behalf of all small towns, doing this in yours and just making some things happen. So, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us. And
thanks
for telling
me.
Us about all the stuff going on in Hawkinsville.
Absolutely. Good to be here. Thank you.
Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Irwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to Irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics. Helping small-town business thrive.
I want to talk more about Hawkinsville, but I kind of want to pitch it this way. I've tried to ask this question before, but it's been a while. So let's see where it goes with Shelley Berryhill. What would you want to make sure people knew about your community if they've never been here, if they just rolled in and you're the first person they meet? What would you want to say, make sure they were aware of? What's unique about it?
Hawkinsville is so unique. We're a small town. Again, our motto is come home to Hawkinsville, because Hawkinsville feels like home. Even if you're just visiting here, you go away thinking I could live there. And that's what we want. We want people to live here. We're somewhat of a bedroom community for Warner Robins Air Force Base. And so we have a lot of people that retire here.
I should have asked this. What's the population of Hawkinsville? I didn't ask that yet.
Hawkinsville's just under 5,000 and the county is 12,000.
Okay. And you guys, I think you said you were the only incorporated city in Pulaski County.
We love that. We're the only incorporated city in the county. So it makes it, like, for example, Lost, local option sales.
It makes it easier.
Our Lost negotiations are a lot easier.
Yeah.
We're unique in that our county has a sole county commissioner.
Yeah.
It's not a board of commissioners. It's one person. Currently, it's Jenna Mashburn, who's a young female. And she is our sole county commissioner. It makes loss negotiations very simple. I go to Georgia municipal meetings and I hear about these long, drug out fights between cities and counties over, for example, loss negotiations. Some of them even end up in court. And ours,
and for the audience, typically, that's the local option sales tax. So
right.
that one penny that
it
gets goes
to the county.
Yeah.
But cities can get a cut, but
right.
we have to negotiate
for it. Yep.
And ever since for 20 years now, you do this once every, is it 5 years or 10 years?
You have to do it after the census, 10. And then you can possibly do it.
Every 6 years.
Well, six is the SPLOST. That's what that one is. So LOST, actually, I think it's after the census.
But regardless, I've been through two, maybe three, or
right.
I guess two.
It depends on how things lined up, yeah.
Right.
You're about to go through your third one.
And they're very unique in that the county commissioner will walk into one of our meetings. And the two that I've been through, this has been the script. The county commissioner walks in and says, well, it's time for loss negotiations. Right now we're 50-50. Y'all want to keep it that way? We say, yeah, negotiations are over. And then I go and hear about all these that are fighting, you know, tooth and nail. But that's what we've done forever.
Yep.
And again, we're very unique in that we have a sole county commissioner. It makes for very brief county commission meetings.
I was going to say,
you don't have a lot of debate going back and forth.
I've met a couple, and I guess maybe I've only met three. Is why I thought it was three, but yeah, it's eight. And I always joke with them. I said, so do you have to record everything you say, because technically you're always in a commission meeting?
Always in a commission meeting.
The open records, open meetings part is
it makes it interesting, but you can move faster with one person. We are so blessed in that we get along with the county so well.
Yeah.
The county and city are not working against each other. We're working with each other for these goals. And we go to her meetings. She comes to most of our meetings. And we all just work together for the same goals. And it makes a huge difference. We joke about we're going to paint the town pink because we have a lot of female leadership in this town.
Yeah.
Our sole county commissioner is a young female. Our city manager is a young female. Up until just recently, the manager of our largest private employer, H&V, was female. And so we've got a lot of female leadership
here. So you're saying things are going good because the women are running the town.
Well, you know, it helps to have varied perspectives.
Yeah.
So many communities are run by old white men.
Well, and you know, you and I have talked a lot in GMA functions about diversity and inclusion. And luckily,
yes,
that's
so
being
important.
Raised in its profile as far as importance. And yeah, a lot of small towns and rural parts of not just Georgia, but states all over the country, not having that diversity and not having those varied perspectives, whether
helps.
It's based on gender, race, or anything else, is actually holding those communities back. And so
if you
go and look at the ones that are having trouble keeping things in the 21st century or getting them there in some cases, that's sometimes a key part of it.
You need racial diversity. You need gender diversity. You need age diversity. You need every different perspective to weigh in on these decisions.
Yeah.
And we're trying hard on that. We truly try to govern, I guess I should say, by focus groups. We really try to get community input on everything we do because it's their town. It's not ours.
Right.
It's their town.
We're the stewards.
Absolutely.
And that's the way it should work. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that probably speaks to we've heard about the progress. You know, you put things in motion 15 years ago, 20 years ago when you started.
Right. It's a long process.
It takes a while to see it, but the key to making sure that's successful over time.
Except
is that
for our
diversity.
New city park. Sarah's going to build it in about 2 years.
Well, let's talk about, there are two things I wanted to bring you. You actually brought them up already. The opera house that you used to break into as a young man, as a child, I should say. And it's certainly an asset. And then the harness racing facility. So talk about both those, because I've never seen either one of those in another place, a small town anyway. There's opera houses
probably
in large cities.
Probably 30, 34
not a small town.
Years ago, I was working at the local bank here, and I went on a chamber trip. We chartered a bus and went to Abbeville, South Carolina, to see what they had done. And the reason we went there, they had an old opera house that they had renovated and were really using in their community to bring art events and to bring other wonderful events to their town. And they also resided on a river. So Hawkinsville, we had an old opera house. It was dilapidated. There was a large group of people that just wanted to tear it down and make parking. We had some local leaders say, nah, let's not do that. And we used splash dollars and we renovated it. And now it's owned by the city of Hawkinsville. It's governed, I guess, for lack of a better word, by the Hawkinsville Pulaski County Arts Council. It's a private nonprofit that got together to bring in events. We bring in comedians and singers, and about once a month we have an event there. And it draws tourists from out of town. It helps our restaurants. It helps all things touristy, gas and other sales. And it's a wonderful asset to our downtown. We also, as you mentioned, have the harness facility. We are the harness horse training capital of Georgia. We can house several hundred horses.
Explain what harness racing is.
Harness racing is popular up north.
Yeah.
And they race them up north for money. But during the winter, it's too cold to train, so they come down south. They come to Hawkinsville. There's a couple of places in Florida. It's So, you know, we compete with them over horses.
Yeah.
But we, on a typical year, we'll house a couple of hundred horses, and they train here. And then they go back up there and race. And our horses have been very successful and winning lots of money up north.
Yeah.
And so we're a popular destination for harness training. And once a year, we typically have a festival, and they'll do qualifying races. Mm-hmm. So if somebody, like you just said, is unfamiliar with harness racing, they can come and watch. And, you know, we there's probably a lot of quarter bets going on the, who's going to win. We are, of course, non-gambling. There's no betting legally going on, but I'm sure there's a lot of
no legal and official gambling. Yeah,
nickels and quarters being passed around as those races go on.
Now, give someone a visual if they've never seen harness racing. What is it? How do you describe it?
It's a horse with it's called a sully. It's a little one-man, two-wheel buggy that harnesses to the horse.
So we're talking Ben-Hur here.
Yes, pretty much. Pretty much. And they race. We've got a quarter mile and a one-mile track at our facility. And they race. And, of course, the fastest horse wins.
That part they probably got.
Yeah, they probably know that. It's a lot of fun, and you can go out there. They're here typically from about October to about April, mm-hmm. training. It's a lot of fun. You can go out there. The facility's open. Pet a horse, watch a horse, watch them race, watch them train, and it's a lot of fun. And that's also a city-owned facility, and we're very proud of it.
Between those two things, I imagine that maintaining those, restoring those in one case, generates a little bit of tourism and economic activity.
It does. These horsemen that come down and train, they buy houses here. Even though they're only here 6 months, they'll buy houses, they buy hay, they buy, you know, horseshoes or whatever.
Right.
And
everything
they shop
comes
here
with that.
And they buy here and they live here. And the facility itself doesn't really make the city any money, but it's the ancillary benefits, them living here, the tourists they bring in, and all the other benefits that we get from it. And it's part of who, like you said, you knew us by that. So I can travel
part of
Georgia.
Your very unique identity.
They'll say, oh, yeah, y'all got them horses down there. So we're known for that. So we're proud of it.
I can't help but ask, because I know you went through, I think it's fair to call it a near-death experience with COVID. And so what that was like to go through, even though you said there were time lapses where you don't remember things and family did, but then also what it did to your perspective just as a human being. So talk about that. Tell us about that.
2020 was an interesting year for me and my family. I was the first confirmed COVID case in Pulaski County. My wife got on to me and said, I don't have to be first at everything. But I was the first confirmed case. I got COVID. I got pretty sick. I went to the local hospital here, and I was their first case. They really didn't know what to do with me, and they were calm and cool and collected. But then they did a chest x-ray. And everything changed. They had never seen, quote, COVID pneumonia. Apparently, the x-rays looked very different than a normal pneumonia case. And they kind of panicked. I could see the change in urgency just in the nurses and doctors. And they told me they were fixing to intubate me and send me to the Coliseum in Macon, which they did. I remember that. I think it was just an oxygen mask, but they had apparently given me some sedative or something. But I remember that oxygen mask coming at me, and I'm thinking, this is the last thing I'm ever going to see. And it was for 40-something days. They put that mask on me, and I'm telling you the rest of this from what people told me, because I was asleep the whole time. I didn't know anything about it. But apparently they took me to Coliseum, where I was on the vent for about 20-something days. I was fighting them. I was having seizures, and I was fighting them this whole time. And they didn't know what was wrong with me while I was having these seizures. And, of course, COVID was so new. The ICU doctor recently told me that out of their first 13 patients that they got with COVID, that I was in the worst condition of any of them, and I was the only one that made it.
Wow.
So it was a very surreal experience. They called my wife a couple of times during this and told her that I would not make it through the night, but God had other plans. And I give him all the glory for this. He saw me through it. And I did make it, and I ended up 3 ambulance rides, 4 hospitals, hundreds of doctors and nurses and everything else. But I did end up making it. I spent about 60 days in the hospital, finally got home, and it was an experience. Again, it was harder on my family than it was me. kind of interestingly, during that time, you're hearing about COVID, but it was still so new to everybody.
Right.
And Vonnie, my wife, started getting phone calls. How's Shelly? What's the latest? And she told me she couldn't do anything but cry. So she didn't want to answer all these phone calls and texts.
Sure.
So she called our local pastor and said, can you just post something on Facebook about how Shelly's doing? So it became a ritual. And twice a day, Vonnie, of course, family couldn't visit. But twice a day, Vonnie would get a phone call from the Coliseum telling them how I was doing. And Vonnie would relay that to our pastor. He would put it on the church's Facebook page. Well, it became a place where, you know, there's nothing special about Shelly. But I kind of became the poster child for COVID because it became an avenue where people could learn about COVID. I was, even though there were hundreds of people in the hospital, I was the only one whose statuses were being posted twice a day.
Twice daily status update.
And so because of that, people started following my story. And Matt, I truly believe, I mean, I still, that's been almost 2 years ago. I have not gone a week without exception since then, without somebody coming up to me, aren't you Shelly? Aren't you that COVID guy? And I'll say yes. And they'll say, well, you don't know me and I don't know you, but boy, I prayed for you. And there were so many people that prayed for me. And I truly believe that's the only reason I'm still here. I think God answered those prayers. I think so many people prayed. He finally just said, fine, keep them. And I'm still here. And I'm so humbled by that and honored by that. And I'm so thankful for what my family went through. I'm so not thankful. I'm so happy that I survived and for all they went through. The healthcare workers were absolute heroes. They didn't know what they were doing at the beginning. And the doctors told me, we'd run out of this medicine, we'd give you this one. They were experimenting. And you know, I give them a lot of credit for me still being here. One of my favorite stories is I was being transferred from one hospital to another as I was getting better. I was better at this point. And the little EMT that rolled me out of the ambulance, before she rolled me into that next hospital, she rolled me over to a retaining wall about 10 feet away, and she said, just sit here a minute and enjoy the air. Because I had, for 40 days, been inside a room, and for all she knew, I was going to spend another 40 or eternity if I didn't even make it out. So she was being very kind to me.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things you don't know to appreciate.
This community, they put up blue bows. It was a very humbling, but yet it's changed my whole perspective. I'm retiring from the school system because it's really given me an understanding that time is short and I need to enjoy what life that I have left. I'm more appreciative of the fact that God does intervene in our lives today. He's not just up there with the universe spinning and with his hands off. He's involved in our day-to-day. And it's given me a much more appreciation for that, a much more sense of urgency on life. I'm probably driving Sarah crazy because it gives me a more urgency with what we're doing at the city. We got to get it done.
It was a unique experience,
but it was, I don't want to go through it again, but I cannot look here and tell you that I'm sorry I went through it. It's been a positive experience.
Yeah.
Romans 8:28, all things work together for good. And while that was not a good experience, it worked for good.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yes.
Well, Shelly, or I should say Commissioner Barry Hill, as we wrap up things on this episode, I want to give you the same opportunity I give all my guests and let you speak directly to the Small Town Podcast audience and tell them why they should come visit or maybe they should come move to Hawkinsville, Georgia.
Hawkinsville is a great community. We are nestled right in the middle of the state. We are a couple hours from the coast, a couple hours from Atlanta, a couple hours from anything in the world you want to do. But we still have that small town feeling. Our motto is come home to Hawkinsville because we truly believe if you visit here, you could see yourself living here. And that's what we'd love to have you to do. It's a Mayberry. It's just a small, close people. We take care of each other. When you see somebody that's going through a sickness or going through a recent death or whatever, it amazes me how this community comes together and takes care of that family. It's truly a small town, come home to Hawkinsville community, and we're very, very proud of it, and invite you to come. Come visit, see our opera house, see our river, see our wonderful downtown. We have got so many great places to eat. We've got agritourism. We've got so much here that people need to come see it for themselves.
Well, Commissioner and sometimes Chairman Shelley Berryhill, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you, Matt, for coming to Hawkinsville, and we look forward to having you visit, and I'm fixing to show you some of these eating places
All
here
right.
in just a moment.
All right, let's go. Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Commissioner Shelley Berryhill for talking with me, and thanks to the Hawkinsville Pulaski County Chamber of Commerce for supporting this episode. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors for Season 4 of Small Town Podcast, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, and the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.